This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27, Attack by Chandavega on the City of Puranjana, Verse 17. Let's chant together. Kshiyamane Svasambande. Kshiyamane Svasambande. Ekasmin bahubir yudha. Ekasmin bahubir yudha. Chintam parang jagamartha. Chintam parang jagamartha. Sa rashtra purabandhava. Sarashtra purabandhava. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, because he had to fight alone with so many soldiers, all of whom were great warriors, the serpent with five hoods became very weak. Seeing that his most intimate friend was weakening, King Puranjana and his friends and citizens living within the city all became very anxious. Purport. The living entity resides within the body and struggles for existence with the limbs of the body, which are referred to here as citizens and friends. One can struggle alone with many soldiers for some time, but not for all time. The living entity within the body can struggle up to the limit of 100 years with good luck. But after that, it is not possible to prolong the struggle. Thus, the living entity submits and falls victim. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung Briddha Kala Aula Shabashukka Bhagala. When one becomes old, it becomes impossible to enjoy material happiness. Generally, people think that religion and piety come at the end of life. And at this time, one generally becomes meditative and takes to some so-called yogic process to relax in the name of meditation. Meditation, however, is simply a farce for those who have enjoyed life in sense gratification. As described in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, meditation, dhyana, dharana, is a difficult subject matter that one has to learn from his very youth. To meditate, one must restrain himself from all kinds of sense gratification. Unfortunately, meditation has now become a fashion for those who are overly addicted to sensual things. Such meditation is defeated by the struggle for existence. Sometimes such meditative processes pass for transcendental meditation. King Puranjana, the living entity, being thus victimized by the hard struggle for existence, took to transcendental meditation with his friends and relatives. His friends together. Oh, let's do some transcendental meditation now that we're coming to the end of life. Kshiyamane svasambande ekasmin bahubir yudha chintam param jagamartha sarashtra purabandhava. Because he had to fight alone with so many soldiers, all of whom were great warriors, the serpent with five hoods became very weak. Seeing that his most intimate friend was weakening, King Puranjana and his friends and citizens living within the city all became very anxious. A sad story. A sad story being told by, who's telling the story? Narada Muni, telling the story to King Prachina Barhishat, quite a name. And why is he telling this story? It's relevant to his life, okay? And why is it relevant to his life? He's become a little bit materialistic, huh? Or maybe a lot materialistic. Okay. Yes, he's telling, he's what we would call preaching, huh? He's preaching to King Prachina Barhishat, and he wants to convince him of what? He wants to convince him of something. Like, I knew someone would say that. Does he say that? Huh? He said to surrender to Krishna. He wants to convince him to surrender to Krishna. Okay, well, ultimately, of course, that's the aim. That's what the Bhagavatam is about. Certainly, at least, he wants to inspire him to convince him to give up his material ways. And so he's telling a story. He's telling a certain kind of story. What kind of story is it? It's an allegory, yes. Now, it's a rather intriguing allegory. The name of the person, the hero. Please, come in. Welcome. Join us. There's plenty of space. The story he's telling is, the hero of the story is Puranjana, the king of a city, and we understand that being an allegory, there are equivalences, that something equals or something represents something else. So it's a story really about every man, or every woman. It's about all of us. In our situation in this world, we're all situated in a kind of city, which the Bhagavad Gita describes as having nine gates. And a city with nine gates generally is a very nice thing. You can go in and out of the city, and so many people can thrive there. Very wonderful. Ah, but alas, we have here a city of nine gates, which is being attacked. It's under attack by soldiers. How many soldiers? 720. Now, the person who is looking for faults in the Bhagavatam will say, no, it shouldn't be 720. 365 days of the year, or 364. So double that, and you have 728 or 730, depending which year. But it's rounded to 360, or perhaps there's a different kind of calculation. I'm not expert on these things. Speaking of calendar, is it today that the month of Purushottama begins? Yeah? So, happy Purushottama Masha. The month of Purushottama is a most auspicious month. It's an, what do they call it, intercalary month. Comes every 3 or 4 years, is it? Who's the expert here on these things? Something like that. To sort of make up for the discrepancy between the sun calendar and the moon calendar, as I understand. It's a time in Vrindavan for all kinds of celebrations. And the reason it's a time of celebrations is because the priests, the pujaris, who would normally be busy doing various priestly duties like samskaras and things like that, they don't do any of those things during this month. Those things are stopped. And so they have extra time. And what do they do with their extra time? They spend more time decorating the deities, for example. They spend more time decorating the altar. They spend more time making special arrangements in the temples. They'll have a special festival. In some temples I visited some years back during this month, every evening was a festival, special festival for the deity. One day it was a wedding of Radha and Krishna. Next day it was boat festival. Next day it was something else. Each day, big, big festival. Very sweet. Very nice. One thing that struck me about this description, analogy, this allegory, is the mention of soldiers in contrast to a verse we all know in Srimad Bhagavatam. Deha patra kalatra adishv atma shanyeshv asatsvapi. You all know this one. No? Yes, Maharaj knows. Deha patra kalatra adishv atma shanyeshv apat. Asatsvapi, yes. And then, tesham? Yes. Tesham pramatta nidanam pasyanapi na pasyati. Yes, that last line. Although seeing, pasyan means seeing, na pasyati, he or she does not see. What is it they are not seeing? Or he or she is not seeing? He or she is not seeing the effect of time. And that effect of time is what's being described here. Chanda Vega. Vega means force. And it's the force of time in the form of the these soldiers. But in this verse from the second canto, first chapter, verse 4, Deha patra kalatrad ishu atma shanyeshu. Shanya means soldiers. The analogy here is the inverse of what we have in today's verse or yesterday's verse. The soldiers of Sutta Goswami are one's body, one's children, one's wife, etc. all of the associations one has with oneself, all of that or all of those persons one identifies with as mine. I and mine are brought together as soldiers thought to be that which protects all of these, my friends, my relatives, my children, my wife. They will protect me. Certainly they will protect me. Atma shanyeshu asatsu api. However, although one thinks that this is the case, tesham pramatta, one is maddened by this assumption, and one thinks, even though one sees what is going on with others, one thinks this will not happen to me. This was a source of amazement for King Yudhishthir, wasn't it? Yudhishthir was asked to answer a quiz. and he was very successful. And the final question, actually it's not the final question, but one of the last questions in the series is, what is the most amazing thing? Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. What is the most amazing thing in the world? And the most amazing thing, immediately Yudhishthira answer, what is the most amazing thing? That although we see people are dying from day to day, still we think that we will not die. Isn't that amazing? He said. The story of King Puranjan is a story of so many zeros put in the wrong place. We heard about zeros placed in the right place or the wrong place. If they're in the wrong place, then what do you have? You have so many zeros, and that's all. There's no value to it. Whereas if you put them in the right place, then you can have a very big number. Speaking of numbers, we also heard yesterday morning Srila Prabhupada explaining that mathematics means knowing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 0. And he said, if you know these numbers, 1 through 0, up to 9 in between, or if you're doing digital system, then you only need ones and zeros, then that's all you need to know. Similarly, he was giving an example, right? What was the example? What was this an analogy for knowing? Knowing what? By knowing the numbers, you know mathematics, you can do everything with mathematics. Similarly, if you know Krishna, you know everything, right? And so, and then, what was the conclusion of that? How to know Krishna? Chanting the holy name. This was from Namamrita, right? Yeah, so, it's as simple as that. It's as simple as that, that we can face the condition and recognize the condition, recognize and face the condition in which we find ourselves. Another story came to mind from the Bhagavatam, which is also described in the Vishnu Purana, that of Sobari Muni. You know the story. Sobari Muni is practicing austerity, quite extreme austerity. He's standing apparently in water, or is he underneath the water? I don't remember. In the water? Oh, he's under the water. Oof. Holding his breath. But alas, what is happening? He's seeing fish. And what is he seeing fish doing? Well, in the Vishnu Purana, it simply says that the fish are very busy sort of swimming about him, and he sees that they are a family, and they seem very happy. As so many fish, they're kind of swimming about him and circling around him, and he sees, you know, they're just happily swimming. Oh, wonderful, he thinks. Yes, he thinks, I am missing out on something. And so he resolves to do something about it. He's a consequential yogi. He interrupts his meditation to go to Mandata, King Mandata, and request from him, after all, he has 50 daughters. He requests from him one of his daughters. Alas, Sobari Muni is very old. He is not looking very attractive for young ladies. And so Mandata falls silent because he really doesn't know what to say to this elderly gentleman You know, he's asking for one of his daughters. How can he offer one of his daughters to this old wrinkly, wreck? For whom the days are numbered. So he says, well, in the Vishnu Purana it says that Mandata, King Mandata says, well, you can go and see my daughters and see if one of them wants to marry you. And so as he's going into the quarters of the ladies, which is not a standard practice, but that's what it says. As he goes in, he, of course, being a yogi, is very powerful, actually, and so he transforms himself. This is mentioned also in the Bhagavatam, into a very handsome young man. So then as he walks in, all of these 50 young ladies are star-struck. Not just one, not just two, but all 50 of them want to marry him. And they're all fighting each other over him. And then Sabari Muni goes back to Mandata, King Mandata, and he says, what do I do now? They all want me. And Mandata says, well, then, let them all marry you. That makes things much easier for King Mandata. Doesn't have to worry anymore about marrying off his daughters. And so indeed, he marries all of them. And again, according to Vishnu Purana, he is, with his mystic powers, able to supply every one of his 50 wives with a very nice place to live, and he is able to expand himself to be with each of them and to have a family with each of them. He has several children, and after some time the several children also have children, and suddenly, well, he gets what he wanted. He saw all these fish swimming around amidst him, and now he has all these children and grandchildren swimming around around him, so to say. And then he suddenly stops in his thought and says, this is not really what I wanted. So he has second thoughts, third thoughts, whatever, and decides, no, this is wrong. He goes to the forest. He decides to renounce, and all the 50 wives go with him. It doesn't mention what happens to all the children. Apparently they all took up studies at Bhaktivedanta College or something. See, we just have to look in the right place for those students. We have to find those students. Where are they? They're there somewhere. And then he lives happily ever after as a renunciant. Something I'm reflecting on with respect to the Bhagavatam is different ways, different sorts of arguments which are given to inspire, well, to inspire renunciation, to inspire surrender to Krishna, to inspire refraining from doing something that shouldn't be done. We have so many examples in the Bhagavatam of persuasion, and its opposite, which you could say is a subset of the first, dissuasion. Dissuasion, being convinced to stop doing something one's already doing, or to not do what one is contemplating to do. An example of what's about to happen, to be done, and then one is convinced not to do it is when King Kamsa hears that he's going to die at the hands of the eighth child of the woman whom he is now accompanying, his sister or cousin sister, on her wedding day. He decides on the spot the best thing to do for his own protection is to kill her. And Vasudeva then thinks very fast of how to convince him not to do this horrid act. It's a very interesting passage. We won't go into the details of it now, but what I would like to request right now is as I've been thinking about, well, developing some sort of writing exercise about this, if you can help me, I want to hear from you some other examples of dissuasion in the Bhagavatam. Different devotees in general are being dissuaded from doing something, or someone's being stopped from doing something. Any ideas? Yes, Mother Jayamantra. Okay, Dhruva Maharaj, what's he being dissuaded from? Stop killing the yakshas. So he's already, in this case, started to do something, and now he's being told that's enough. Why is he being told that's enough? Huh? Because it is enough. Against the reputation of devotees. Oh, okay. All right. And then so Dhruva Maharaj is convinced, right? To stop. Yes. You can stop now. The ones that gave you trouble, they're already dead. These are others. Okay. Yes. Yes. What was the argument? There's a great devotee in there, huh? They figured there's going to be trouble again. Okay, and who stops Indra from killing the mother? Narada Muni, there he is again. Yes, Alakana. Narada Muni stops. Oh, okay. Is that in the Bhagavatam? Okay. Yes. All right, Maras.
Maharishi and his brothers stopped Brahma when Brahma was chasing his daughter.
Oh. Uh huh. And how did he convince him to stop? Uh-huh. Your position. You are Lord Brahma, after all. Yes. Yes. Another. Uh-huh. From Mahabharata. Yes. I think that's a quite famous one in some respects. What's the argument there? I was remembering that, but trying to remember what the argument is, why he should stop. Does anyone remember this? It's King Janamejaya, because his father, King Parikshit, or grandfather. King Parikshit has been killed by Takshaka, the snake. He decides, well, then let's get rid of all the snakes. And so he starts a Sharpa Shatra. And he's invoking with mantras all the snakes into the fire. He simply chants mantras and they all get sucked into this fire one after another. And Takshaka is already in the cosmic vacuum cleaner when some, what's his name, Ashtika? I forgot the name. One sage somehow manages to intervene. I'm forgetting the details. But yes, that's a nice example. Did we mention, related to that and related to sacrifice, King Prithu is performing sacrifices. He's completed 99 and he wants to do one more. He wants to be one better than Indra, who has done 99, is that right? And so he is about to do the sacrifice, but the sacrificial horse is stolen by Indra, who then, in order to hide, changes cloth to become a sannyasi of sorts. And so when, the son of Prithu goes after him, he sees that he's a sannyasi and he thinks, oops, can't kill that person anyway, that must be somebody else. And so it goes again and again. Every time Prithu tries to do the sacrifice, every time Indra comes, steals the horse, takes another form, and every time he takes another form, a whole new movement, a whole new apasampradaya begins, following Indra in his false form. And so finally, Lord Brahma comes to him and says, will you please stop this? You're just making more and more trouble in the world because we're just getting a lot of apasampradayas running around everywhere. And besides, he says, he shouldn't try to kill Indra. He is a demigod. And demigods are part of my body. It's actually a very interesting lesson. Sometimes we might think, you know, there's someone who needs to be dealt with in some severe way as a kind of opponent giving us trouble. But Brahma comes and says, no, he's actually part of me. So you can't kill him. He actually says, you cannot destroy him. So give it up. And then he says, and make friends with him. And so in the end of this, it's a very happy ending. Prithu and Indra come together and offer, I don't know if they offer obeisance to each other. They say, I'm sorry. And then everything goes on happily ever after. So many of these stories, are about people who are submerged one way or another in material existence, and the process, the effort, the means of persuasion, different means of persuasion are taken to get them out of that illusion. For ourselves, we do various practices to get ourselves out of illusion, to keep ourselves out of illusion. And yet, have you noticed? We might still find ourselves in illusion at times. Rarely, no doubt, but still at times. And so the question we may ask ourselves is, what does it take to convince me, to get out of illusion? What will it take? How can I be convinced? How can I be attracted to Krishna? How can I be convinced to give up my tendency to sink? I climb, I crawl up the grease pole of spiritual life. Sometimes it feels rather slippery, no? I'm crawling up, I'm climbing, I'm gripping, and then I'm slipping down. And then I'm thinking, actually, this is the proper mode of existence. Slipping down is actually very nice. It's very smooth, and it's very, you know, it's quite easy, and it's really quite pleasant. So what does it take to convince us? We need to be convinced. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, and somebody sitting on this asana, which I have to say, this particular asana is not the most comfortable. and is pontificating, you know. Are we convinced? How are we convinced? Prabhupada once called all his senior devotees together and said, "So, are you convinced?" And they were all silent. And then Prabhupada said, "Well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm convinced." So, yes. Tesham pramattanidanam pasyanapi na pasyati. Although seeing, we may not see. So how to keep alert in Krishna consciousness? This is the challenge. It's a challenge which we each have individually, which we each have to take responsibility for ourselves to be awakened, to practice awakeness. Buddhi yoga. Buddhi means intelligence. It also means being awake. But indeed, time is passing, and the 720 soldiers are chasing after me as well as you, and so and my five-headed snake, the five pranas are struggling, and for some of us, some of you, some growling of hunger might be there. You want to get those pranas re-nourished so that they can continue the struggle. But in the end, the struggle is not to be won. This struggle is a losing battle. And so then, now is our opportunity to surrender. The word surrender actually in warfare means, right, holding up a white flag and say, "I can't take it anymore. I surrender. Don't shoot. Don't shoot. I'm putting down my weapons now. Don't shoot." So this process of Krishna consciousness is a practice of holding up the white flag. I surrender. I'm not fighting anymore. Does that mean, therefore, not maintaining the body, not, you know, the five airs? No. Means maintaining, but maintaining to serve Krishna, that's all. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.